If I had any sense, I would just say amen and we would be done. This morning, I want to tell you how I came to believe in resurrection. So I just want us to have that sink in for a minute. And if you're thinking, am I in the right church? Aren't Unitarian Universalists the ones who are inclined to shed doubt and skepticism and even some, my friends, unhealthy avoidance when it comes to Easter? Let me ask you to stay with me and let me tell you about a woman named Grace. Now, do you know how sometimes someone's name describes not just exactly who they are, but also how they are? Do you know sometimes a name is perfect for someone? That's how it was with Grace. Now, Grace was tall for a woman. She was almost 6 foot, and she had long, graceful arms, long, graceful fingers, long, graceful legs. In adulthood, she began to wear her gold blonde hair in a beehive, a style that she never relinquished, even though everyone else had over time. She had beautiful, long, graceful eyelashes, and she had large, gracefully shaped eyes that looked at you with openness and curiosity and gentleness. Grace walked with grace, she sat with grace. At mealtime, she folded her fingers together and she held them close with grace as she said grace. She was so graceful that she even did ungraceful things with grace, like change baby diapers. And she commuted to work for 25 years with grace. And she raised 4 daughters with grace and buried 1 husband too early with grace. And she married another who was not quite right for her, but she did it with grace. And when we were children, my siblings and I would go to Grace's house every Easter, where after a meal of honey, ham, and potatoes and some vegetable that we kids would slip from our mouths down into the waiting napkin in our laps and fold so that no one would see, she would send us out into her wide open yard. And she told us to search for the eggs that she had dyed the night before, in pink and blue and yellow and purple and orange and red. And after we had found them all, she would call all of us back in, children and adults alike, and she would lead us to a table. And there she would say, "Behold, the coconut lamb cake." It was in the shape of a baby lamb. There was a pink eye, a gumdrop. And we would say, "Why a lamb?" And she would say, "A lamb because Easter is about new life and new beginnings, and because Jesus was said to have been more concerned about the 1 lost sheep than the other 99 who were found. Grace, if you give me 2 slices, I think I can understand what you mean. And if you give me 3, I will never forget it." Grace always gave us 3 slices. She even cut the cake with grace. Now, I never did forget the cake, nor did I forget the meaning, but I did grow older, and I did see grace less. You know how it is. 1 year we went on vacation for Easter. Another year I was getting older, I spent with friends. Another year I was looking at colleges, and the next year I was gone. I was gone. In other words, life moved on, things changed. Traditions changed. I changed. We change. And in the later years, I only saw Grace once or twice a year. There were cards on the birthdays. There were gifts at Christmas. The one thing Grace could not do with grace was give good Christmas gifts. But what prevailed most of all in this time was the distance between me and her. Days turned into weeks, turned into months, turned into years, I think, when I didn't even really think of her. Because her body, her presence, her grace were so far away from me. Now, it had been 1.5 years since I had last seen Grace. There's too much traveling to do. There's too much life to live. There's too much adventure to find. When I awoke one early morning in a foreign country, thousands of miles from home, the phone ringing in my room, 5 a.m., and I stumbled to the phone. You know how it is. Those calls at that time of day are never good. Hello? It's my mother's voice on the end of the line, quiet and still, like this room. Nathan, she says, Nathan, I am sorry. Your grandmother Grace has died. Last night in her sleep, Grace died. And before I tell you what I experienced in the weeks after that, it is worth saying the questions of Easter and resurrection and what does it all mean, were at this point in my life, maybe like in your life, were totally inconsequential to me. Easter, whatever. I was 23 years old. And I had that attitude because I was more interested in rejecting the ideas of Easter than I was in discovering the meaning. And my friends, there's a difference. And the difference has all to do with how you and I experience death, because Easter is about death. And it is also about how you and I experience life after death, because Easter is about that too. Now, so go back with me into the room. Blood rushing to my brain. I'm feeling faint, pulse rising, breath increasing. Even though I was barely 23 years old, this was my first death. In a fog, I pack a bag and I get on the first plane home and I fly for hours and hours because I was so far away from her. I was so distant from Grace. I want us to forget Sundays in church. I want us to forget the smells and the bells of church. I want us to forget everything the pastors and the priests have told you to believe or not believe in your life, because these are the religious moments. These moments high in the air, on a plane, eating airline food and not enough legroom, and I'm asking, what does it mean to live? Asking, what does it mean to die? Asking, where do we go? Wondering how it is Grace's body was taken from me and from us so suddenly one night in her sleep. And wondering also how it is, this is the odd thing, that I was suddenly so much closer to her. Now, maybe something similar has happened to you. Maybe you too have noticed how someone you love who has died, you suddenly feel close to them. Right? Imagining how they might feel in a certain situation. You remember their laugh. You recall their favorite words. You can sense them having joy when you have joy. You can sense them feeling pain when you are in pain. And it was like that for me in those days after Grace's body was gone. When we prayed at the funeral, I imagined next to me her fingers closing with Grace. And we cut the cake at the reception because she loved cake, a coconut cake. I recalled her taking the long knife and cutting it with Grace. Even now, when I enter a large room, I imagine her gracefully entering in. Not stomping in, not running in, but gracefully entering in. Her long legs moving toward me, saying, Nathan, come give me a hug. It has been too long. You have been too far away. It's like that now with Grace. Her body is gone, but now she's everywhere for me. She was my first death. She was also, in a way, my first resurrection, because her love for me and mine for her is alive. Now, sometimes I think that one of the reasons that we reject the Easter story, it's so easy for us to disavow and to not understand, is that it feels so far away from our own experience. We just don't get it. It seems so odd. And so when Maureen says out loud the name Jesus, we filter that through the ways that I don't know, the Christian right has given us the name, or we filter through the ways that our church or our temple talked about him, and we don't connect that Jesus to the Jesus we know who was a Jew, my friends. He was a Jewish person. And the Last Supper was not the Last Supper, it was a Seder meal. And we forget and don't connect that he showed us how to welcome the prisoner and how to wash the feet of the prostitute and greet the stranger. I don't understand how we have allowed the name Jesus to be a taboo in our mouths and in our churches. I just don't understand it. I cannot explain how the Jesus of the past is not connected to the Jesus that we have the potential to think about. And then we hear Maureen say out loud how Mary and Joanna and Mary, mother of James, went to bring spices to the tomb of Jesus just to visit and pay their respects. And we don't connect that story to the times you and I have gotten in the car and carried in our laps flowers or pictures or flags to the person who has died in our life. And we drive to the seminary, to the cemetery, and how we pull the car in silently out of respect. We don't connect that experience to these stories. And then we hear Maureen say out loud how the women got there to find the stone rolled away from the tomb, and men in dazzling clothes asking, "Why do you look for living among the dead?" And somehow we hear that and we get all literal on ourselves and we say, "I don't believe stuff like that. I don't believe in the Bible." And we don't connect that to the moments when we realize standing to the grave of our loved one, how we are looking in the wrong place, my friends, to remember who they were and who they are, to recall their presence and their love. And then we hear Maureen say out loud how on the third day he rose from the dead, and maybe we, you know, roll our eyes and we smirk and we set it aside as some crazy story that everybody else believes but not me because I'm smarter than them. But we don't connect that to those long plane rides at night, when heading to the funeral, we feel suddenly closer to the one we have lost. Our grandmothers, our parents, our brother, our sister, our friend, my friends, even our children. Forget everything you learned or did not learn in Sunday school. Forget the priests and the pastors who told you what not to believe or told you what you needed to be convinced of. Forget the smells and the bells. This is the resurrection that I think we can believe in. How the people we love are still with us. Maybe this is what life after death looks like. I love what a colleague of mine, Forrest Church, who died too young, said once in a sermon. He said, "No one knows about life after death. But about this," he said, "we surely know. There is love after death." He said, "Death is love's measure. Not only is our grief testimony to our love when someone dies, but when we ourselves die," he says, "the love we have given to others is the one thing that death cannot kill. Only our unspent love dies with us." Think about that for a moment. Only our unspent love dies with us. But our spent love, that lives on forever. It is immortal. My grandmother Grace has taught me this. And I know someone in your life has taught you this. Easter and the story of Jesus teaches us this. It reminds me of a moment in ministry a colleague described to me, and we'll share it with you, and then we will close. And he talks about how some years ago a friend's father died, and the family, following his instructions, told the undertaker to have his body cremated and then to scatter the ashes from some windblown point. And so the family waited. It was the springtime for the windiest day of the month. And with the undertaker, they climbed to the highest hill in town. It was open, treeless. So they climbed to the top, all of them gathered there. And just as a large gust came over that hill, the undertaker opened the lid to the jar and flung the ashes to the wind. Afterwards, this man's granddaughter said, "Now I know where I can look for Papa. Papa is everywhere." Easter teaches us there is love after death. Easter teaches us there is life after death. My friends, may we believe this year, please, in Easter. Say with me, Amen. Let me invite us to rise for our closing hymn, 96.